The Smithsonian's National Museum of African American History and Culture opens this Saturday. It will probably be a smooth and pretty impressive experience for most visitors, but the creation of a museum is not always smooth. Author Tanya Bolden documented the process in her new book, How to Build a Museum. She joins us now. Good morning, Tanya.
Good morning, Celeste. Thank you.
Also with us is Daniel Black. He's a professor of African American Studies at Clark Atlanta University and author of the book, The Coming. Good morning, Daniel.
Good morning. Glad to be here.
And still with us is editor Michael Caruso from Smithsonian Magazine. Welcome back, Michael.
Thanks, Celeste.
And Michael, I wanted to give you a chance to let you finish what you were saying when we ran out of time before. I had just finished asking you about why it took 100 years or more to build this museum.
There was so much to overcome. The Smithsonian Museum is on the National Mall. The National Mall has been called America's front yard. On one end is the U.S. Capitol, which was built largely by slaves. On one part of it is the White House, which was built largely by slaves. On the other end is the Abraham Lincoln Memorial, the great emancipator, and also the site of the March on Washington and the I Have a Dream speech by Martin Luther King. In the middle, there were slave pens. Washington, D.C. was a slave market. In fact, the story of that is in 12 Years a Slave of Solomon Northrop took place, the Yellow House that he was housed in and imprisoned in, was right there on the National Mall, too. So it's an extraordinary thing. The one that I skipped is the Washington Monument. Of course, when Washington died, he had control of over 300 slaves himself. So it's an extraordinary place to put this museum, and there was so much to overcome, and it is so thrilling and amazing to be at this point where we are now.
Tanya, I wanted to play you this comment. This is from 1994. It's former North Carolina Senator Jesse Helms. He is explaining why he opposed funding for this museum back then.
Once we approve this museum, we will be called upon by other minority groups, and they will be justified in doing so, to provide museums for their particular groups.
To a certain extent, there, as Michael alluded to, there were specific challenges for this museum. What were they, Tanya? Mm-hmm.
Well, the fact that for decades, black lives and black achievements upon these shores didn't really matter to a lot of Americans outside of the black community.
So, Daniel, let me bring you then into this. Does that now mean that the opening of this museum is more than symbolic?
Yes, the opening of this museum is more than symbolic. The opening of this museum is the introduction of black worth and black achievement and black excellence into the very narrative and into the very fabric of what it means to be American. And the truth is that American history is not complete until this chapter of the story is written and read and told. Because black folks in America have been waiting for our turn to tell our own story and to tell that story as part of what it means to be on these American shores and to assure that everyone reads that chapter of our history, not just black people.
So I want to play...
And Celeste, may I ask...
Oh, go ahead, Tanya.
I'm sorry. The point, you know, of the museum and the point of a lot of the work that we do is that black history is everyone's history.
That's right.
Just as the Trail of Tears is my history, too.
That's right.
I'm an African American. Just as the building of the Transcontinental Railroad and what was done to Irishmen and Chinese workers on it, that's my history, too. The Model T is my history, too. All the history is everybody's history.
So that kind of echoes this comment from Lonnie Bunch III. He's the director of the Smithsonian's National Museum of African American History and Culture. Let's hear what he has to say.
I would argue that in many ways, African American history is the quintessential American story. That in some ways, when you look at core American values of resiliency, optimism, spirituality, where better to look than this community? Almost any moment where you see an expansion of liberty or a redefinition of citizenship, you see the African American experience as part of it. So in many ways, I don't see this as a separate story. I see this as just another way to understand America, but through an African American lens.
So, Michael, why then have a separate museum rather than incorporating all of these artifacts and all of this history into an American history museum?
Well, we have one of those, too. In fact, it's right next door. And the real question that has come up a lot is, what do you put in each museum? The answer is, there are too many stories to tell for one museum. There's too many stories to tell for the Smithsonian now has 19 museums. And frankly, there's too many stories for us to tell in even those 19 museums. Everybody deserves to have their story told. And the stories that are within this museum are so powerful, so poignant, and so important to everybody in America that they need their own building.
Tanya, where did all of these tens of thousands of objects come from?
Well, they came from, they made requests. They were very bold in asking people to make donations, individuals and institutions. They acquired some objects at auction. And there was the Save Our African American Treasures workshop held in about a dozen cities around the country where people were invited to bring up to, I think, three items, their family treasures, heirlooms, and have them reviewed and possibly dated, and most importantly, you know, advised on how to preserve them. And inevitably, some of the people ended up wanting to donate those items to the museum.
Daniel, I want to go back to this question of why we need this separate museum. And this is Jonetta Cole. She is the director of the Smithsonian National Museum of African Art.
So many said, why do we need a special place to tell those stories when there isn't an acknowledgement of a people's history and their culture? There's no acknowledgement of those people.
Is there a risk, Daniel, when you have so many of these objects separate, that some Americans will just choose to avoid that museum altogether?
There is that risk, but there's also the invitation for people to become more enlightened, to become more excellent. And we have to be honest about this in one way. There has always been a Museum of American History. If that museum cared enough, if that museum was interested enough, if we as Americans were interested enough in telling all the stories of all the Americans, one museum really would do. But the problem has been historically that we have not cared enough. We have not, as a people, we've not raised our children, all of us, to believe that every life and every life's narrative must be told and must be heard. And so until we get to that place, we have to have these separate museums. And the point of the separate museums is to assure that no one is left out, to assure that no voice is silenced. But hopefully the day will come where everyone will get clear that every museum is our inheritance, and every child is absolutely required to know every story.
We'd love to hear from all of you out there listening. What parts of African-American history would you want to see featured? It opens this weekend. Maybe there's already an exhibit on the thing you want to see. You can tweet us at OST Talk or join our conversation on Facebook. My guests are author Tanya Bolden, who wrote How to Build a Museum, Clark Atlanta professor Daniel Black, and Smithsonian Magazine editor Michael Caruso. We sent our producers out on the streets of Atlanta to ask about the new African-American Museum, and here's a few responses.
My name is Kwamika. I'm from the west side of Atlanta. I think it's important that they have an African American museum for the younger generation that coming up could be able to learn more about their history.
My name is Marissa, and I'm from Peoria, Illinois. I think especially with all the controversy going on in America or the United States, I think it's really important that we add that value, that they are important and they matter just as much.
Tanya, what was the philosophy in the creation of this museum? Who was their target demographic?
I think it's for everyone, for children, for adults. It really is. The museum welcomes the world.
What do you mean by that?
Well, it's saying, welcome, come in. There's a symbolic sort of porch thing in part of the design. It's saying, come and learn, come and be inspired, because the museum, yes, they'll cover the brutality, it will cover the brutalities, the horrors, the ordeals, and all that. But there'll also be jubilees and talk about the striving and the overcoming and the enormous strides people of African descent made in this country against, you know, impossible odds.
So how did you deal with that, Michael, the balancing of joy with an obviously story which is so often tragic?
Yeah, that was really important to us, and I think it's important to the museum, too. The museum is actually structured very interestingly. There's five stories that are below ground, and as you go down into those stories, you see a lot of dark stories that are told. But as you come up through the rest of the museum, you'll see the light, basically. You'll see stories, amazing, inspiring stories of achievement in the arts, in sports, in the military, all over, basically, American life. And that's the great experience that African Americans have had and that everybody needs to learn from. We did try to do the same thing in the issue of Smithsonian Magazine, knowing that there's a lot of people that won't get to visit Washington, D.C. soon, and we wanted to give them a taste of what the museum was like and what African American life is like today for those who don't know it as well or don't know parts of it as well. And so we invite you to read the magazine and get a taste of what's in the museum.
Daniel.
And there's a design, too, Celeste.
Yeah.
I mean, the three-tier Urban art-inspired corona, which the architectural team, for them, it represents celebration and praise.
Yeah. So, you know, obviously there's going to be a lot of sorrow in that museum, but try to balance it with joy. So Daniel, what parts of African American history did you think were the most important at the moment that they opened? Because, you know, they'll be rotating the exhibits. So what were the stories that had to be in there now?
I think one of the stories that absolutely had to be in there now is the story of our coming to this land, the notion of how we arrived. That moment.
And how early.
That's right. Which was really before America was America.
Yeah, before right? The settlers landed at Plymouth Rock.
Absolutely. That moment known as the Middle Passage, or what we call the Ma'afa, the great tragedy, the great destruction of black lives across the Atlantic Ocean to this place. That story had to be told because the number of lives lost, the amount of culture destroyed, and the amount of culture retained, quite frankly, is something I think the world has never known. And in many instances, it's something that people simply don't know. You know, we've been told that Africans were brought on slave ships. We knew that. But the question of exactly who was brought, from where were they brought, what were their dreams, what were their hopes, these were human beings. They weren't simply cargo. These were human beings who had stories and who had histories. And I think telling that story helps also people in this land, especially African Americans, be clear and be proud of the African heritage from whence they come, so that one is not believing this notion that their history only starts during slavery. No, that's simply the bridge that brings one from Africa to America, but it connects to a larger narrative that I think is one of the most fascinating stories ever been told.
And that is the subject of your book, The Coming.
Sorry,
Tanya, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you know, just picking up on his excellent points, is that we have to stop and think that if we were a nothing people, people like me wouldn't be here.
That's right.
So whatever I've achieved, the 30-something books I've done, my degrees and all that, that says less about me and more about the people whence I come.
Yes.
Michael, to what extent is the museum and then the issue of your magazine speaking to not just adults, but young people, people still in grade school?
Well, I think that's a really important aspect of it. Obviously, we want to educate everybody, and hey, there are plenty of adults who need education too, especially on subjects like this. But of course, we want to speak to young people too. A lot of American history is lost to us on a regular basis, on an almost annual basis. And so it's really important that kids learn what their history is, because that's what's in their DNA. That's what is in our culture. And if you're going to operate well, you have to operate in an informed way. So that's a big part of our mission.
Tanya, how much consideration went into the number of young people that would be walking through and might be upset by some of the exhibits in the museum?
Well, I can't speak for the curators, but I think that children are more resilient than we realize, and I know people often say it's going to disturb them, and I say they ought to be disturbed, because being disturbed is a door to enlightenment. I recall I was 12, 13, when by accident I stumbled upon a photograph of Emmett Till and his casket, And I was disturbed, very disturbed. And my parents had to sit down.
Emmett Till was the young man who was
to me.
Murdered because he allegedly smiled or made inappropriate.
Yeah. And so I think children, when I work with kids in school and we talk about some of the tough issues, I put it in perspective and talk about, look at all the global horrors and how would you feel if because that's the only way to become empathetic.
Daniel, how important...
Just to be disturbed.
I wonder for you, as a professor especially, how important this museum is and how much of this history do students who come to Clark Atlanta know?
Well, I think that's really the critical question, and that is what gap does this history fill in terms of the public consciousness of who we are as African people in this country. And this museum, quite frankly, I feel like it would be the educational lifeblood of the nation. Black kids, white kids, Native American kids, Asian kids, most kids are very, very, very ill-informed about African history, African American history in this country. It is incorrect to believe that because a child is black, they automatically know black history. That certainly is not true. We have awesome, 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 brilliant, amazing young people who come to Clark Atlanta University. What's also true is their knowledge of African American history is often very very lacking, quite frankly. And what I've loved teaching African American history is the way in which our young people at Clark Atlanta University are inspired and are thrilled and are moved by learning about their own culture, because of course what they're really doing is constructing their own identity. And I think that's what this museum does on a national level. It allows African descended people in America to construct an identity they're proud of and that they can put on the national scene without having their heads bowed.
We're talking about the opening of the new Smithsonian Museum on African American History, and the new issue of Smithsonian Magazine is dedicated to the opening of that museum with four different covers. Michael Caruso is the editor of Smithsonian Magazine. Daniel Black, whose voice you just heard, is a professor of African American Studies at Clark Atlanta University, also author of the book The Coming on the Middle Passage. And Tanya Bolden is the author of the new book How to Build a Museum. Thanks so much to all three of you.
Glad
Thank
to be
you
here.
So much.
Thank you.
For today, that is On Second Thought from GPB News. I'm Celeste Headley. Have a great day.